Of course, the crowd wants Reed to go for it. Wouldn't be surprised if he did on 4th-and-1.
So, anyways, with that, time, George.
Welcome to 4th-and-1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs. And Nick, I'm sorry I went to the lake and we didn't get a chance to record podcasts for a while here. But how have you been doing, sir?
I'm good. I mean, it wasn't just the lake, obviously. I had my own family member that had some health concerns that needed to get worked out. And so we'll see how all that shakes out. And then you had the lake. So, it's been an interesting couple of weeks.
Well, and there have been a few newsworthy items that have cropped up, here during the last couple of weeks. Look, rookie minicamp, nothing really shocking or surprising, I don't think, from that. Just a good chance to get those guys in, get those guys working, get the development train rolling, for Nick Bolton and Creed Humphrey and the rest of the new draft class. I did want to ask, though, about Le'Veon Bell, Nick, because I feel like you would have been thrilled to play for Andy Reid in your career, but apparently Le'Veon Bell felt different. Were you surprised by those comments?
There's a reason he's worn out his welcome in two spots and guaranteed that he worn out his welcome in three spots now. So at some point he's just going to have to admit that, as Eminem would say in his song, when your run is over, you got to admit when it's in, it's in. So, for Bell, he's not a dynamic runner anymore. His game was always based on patience and a good O-line. So and then he had the burst once he hit the hole at that point after he kind of patiently waited. But it's just he hit his max number of carries for his body to be able to handle. And now that explosiveness that he had is gone. So what his game was revolved around, the part of his game that he needed to keep up, he doesn't have anymore. And he clearly didn't have last year, given that the Chiefs weren't able to utilize him as much as I guarantee they would have if they'd had the opportunity. So, for athletes, it gets tough to admit when their run is over and there's nothing they can do about it. And for him, it's clearly easier to blame it on Andy Reid or the Chiefs organization, but it's not anybody's fault. It's not their fault. It's not, it's just kind of some point he's going to have to admit that, that it's just that time in his career. And hopefully he made as much money as he wanted to be able to live his life and enjoy the rest of his life. So I think for him, it's unfortunate that he decided to say his frustrations publicly, and that's not going to work out well because you've got so many people from the Andy Reid tree working in the league across the NFL. And then you have the people that haven't worked with him respect the heck out of him. So if you're going to criticize Andy Reid, who's won a Super Bowl, then, and had the success that he's had in the NFL, pretty much other coaches are going to be like, yeah, we're good. Thank you. Thank you for being interested in us, but we're not interested in you. And then the other kicker on top of it is he said how he wanted to play for a defensive minded head coach. And I want to be like, then what was Mike Tomlin? What was Mike Tomlin? He was a defensive minded coach. He wasn't an offensive guru. So I don't know. It's a lot of mixed messages that he's putting out there just to kind of soothe himself, I feel like. So I wish him the best in his future endeavor. And, it was the Chiefs gave him an opportunity. Didn't work out. So everybody gets to move on.
And he did walk it back a little bit, say he really enjoyed the other aspects of his time in Kansas City. But Bell, a guy clearly passed his prime. I did appreciate, a friend of the podcast, Jeff Allen, and some folks like that. They did not hold back in their analysis of what Le'Veon Bell had to say. Jeff Allen was quick to point out, like you said, that, much of the NFL comes from the Andy Reid coaching tree at this point, and he's respected around the league. So it seemed odd for a free agent to put that out there the way that he did. Especially because the ironic thing is, I think you look at the offensive line they have now, I think he could have more success behind a line like the one the Chiefs have put together. But, maybe he just wasn't happy that there wasn't a welcome mat thrown out for him, to come back after last season. So,
Well, he's not gonna have to worry about that experience anymore.
Going back to last week, probably more important news when it comes to the upcoming season. Found out that Kyle Long got hurt. He had come out of retirement to sign with the Chiefs a few months ago. He's part of that offensive line rebuild they've put together there. Startling transformation, really, of the offensive line. How big of an impact do you think it is to lose Kyle Long at this stage of the game, knowing that it looks like the timeline is going to have him out throughout training camp, which, especially coming to a new team, I think that puts his availability and usefulness early in the season in severe jeopardy at this point.
I think with a guy like Kyle Long, having him around as kind of a leader was kind of what you were spending your money on more so than if he did or didn't see the field. And I know that may sound weird to say, but you want somebody that has his type of work ethic, his type of mentality out on the football field in the meeting room. And you kind of wanted him to kind of be one of those veterans that could kind of help some of the younger guys if they needed it. And this is kind of the leadership you wanted from a player of his stature and his success in the NFL. So that was kind of the big thing of why you were bringing him into the office, essentially. Now, the Chiefs have set themselves, Brett Veach in the front office have set themselves up to where they could withstand injuries, especially on the interior, and have play on the plate, whether that's going to be a Trey Smith or for some a Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, or Austin Blythe or yes, Nick Allegretti, who I'm, and then you have Wiley as well.
Yeah, Yasir Durant still hanging around there. He got some time last year.
So I mean, you have options across that offensive line, and they could still. You hope it doesn't happen. You knock on wood that doesn't happen. But they've set themselves up to where they could sustain some injuries and not have it completely cripple their depth and their offensive line collectively. So you would love to have Kyle Long healthy and out there, but I mean that's not going to be the case for a while. And you'll just see how it goes. But what you were what you were investing in him is you were investing in him to give time till Trey Smith could get up to par, or if there was a certain way they wanted to use Long, maybe at right tackle to buy Niang time to not have the pressure on him, or certain players to not have the pressure on him, or to kind of be a hold on in case Laurent Duvernay-Tardif had to stay away another year from a COVID to try to help out up there in Canada in the medical field. So, I mean, there was just a lot of different things that it kind of helped give an absorption by signing him. So, I mean, they're not in a bad spot in terms of offensive line and depth.
Yeah. I mean, just, for those who were under a rock, I mean, they've got Orlando Brown at left tackle, Joe Tooney at left guard, signed Austin Blythe and drafted Creed Humphrey there at the center position. Mike Rimmers is back to compete with Lucas Niang at right tackle, but Kyle Long, a lot of people, I think, kind of had him penciled in as the starting right guard.
Yeah.
How do you think, I think mandatory minicamp starts on Tuesday this week. I think it would have been really interesting to see who was taking the one reps, who would have been under center with the first string, had Long been healthy. Do you think it's Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, or do you think Wiley, do you think the year away hurts LDT and Wiley's still the front runner at that spot now that since he signed his tender in his back, or how do you think that does impact the right guard position?
I personally think short term, I personally don't care who's out there this week. Like, it doesn't matter to me. What's going to matter to me is that near the end of training camp and those preseason games, that's going to matter to me who's there. And at that time, I wouldn't be stunned if Creed Humphrey is not the center, and it wouldn't stun me if Trey Smith's the right guard. Like, neither one of those options is going to stun me if those things happen. So, I mean, whenever they start, if they start bumping in the lineup here in a couple months, then it'll be, I won't be stunned and I won't be surprised about it in any way, shape, or form. But I get it if they have Blythe in at center, and I get it if they have Wiley or Duvernay there at the right guard spot. But at the end of the day, I think it's, you know, I personally think it's going to be Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith's jobs to lose at center and right guard.
Well, Blythe, you know, like you said, I mean, they didn't draft Creed Humphrey to sit around, and he's a guy who proved at Oklahoma that he can come in, pick up an offense and make an impact early. You know, cause he did that going back to his redshirt freshman year. But Blythe is a guy who also, I mean, he played center for the Rams last year, but the 2 years before that, he was the starting right guard for the Rams. So, you know, Blythe is a guy who I could see sliding over if they're happy with what they've got in Creed Humphrey. And then Blythe could still obviously be the backup center, but I wouldn't count Austin Blythe out of the mix at right guard if Kyle Long is in fact out for all of training camp.
Yeah, I personally, I would keep Blythe at center, even if it's from a depth position. And I'm curious to see if Alec Greddy gets some snaps at center here in the next couple months. That's something that's going to intrigue me if that happens.
Yeah, but I mean, look, bottom line is the Chiefs are in much better shape to deal with an injury to the offense. Like last year, when Eric Fisher went down, and we talked about it before the Super Bowl, that injury alone, you know, whether the Chiefs could cover him or not, was going to determine if they could beat Tampa Bay in the Super Bowl. The answer was they couldn't, and they got beat and beat pretty handily in the Super Bowl. I think they were determined not to let that happen again this year. And just for situations like that, obviously Long was one of the guys they brought in, but it's very unusual for a team to make it through an entire season without any injuries to the offensive line at some point. And so, you know, that depth's getting tested maybe a little bit earlier than you would like to see it get tested, but at least that depth exists this year in a way that it didn't last year. Speaking of Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, how eager are you to see him? Obviously mandatory minicamp, no pads, you're not going to get a real gauge on where he's at probably, unless he comes in 30 pounds overweight or something ridiculous, which I don't think that's going to happen. But you're really looking at week two, week three of training camp before we find out, did the year off help him get healthy? And is he back reinvigorated, ready to go? Has Father Time caught up with him a little bit after a year off from the game too? I mean, we're not going to know what the situation with LDT is until probably that Arizona game, right?
Yeah, I don't think you're going to know where he's at until training camp happens. And like you said, what he looks like in game shape in the preseason game. So I personally don't think you're going to have many answers on him until that time. I was kind of surprised when they said he's going to be here for mandatory mini camp, because with the problem he has that a lot of people don't have to think about being in the United States is kind of crossing the border and quarantine policies and things that they have up there in Canada.
Yeah, getting back home will be challenging for him.
Like, yeah, that's the first thing I thought of whenever I heard Andy Reid say he was going to come for mandatory. It's like, oh man, does he, like, what's he going to have to go through to get back to Canada for a couple of weeks until training camp starts? So I don't envy him having to go through that. And that's those real world things, like, you know, that a lot of people don't think about. They just, you know, that, like, real world wise, if he goes back up to Canada, I mean, what's he going to have to go through to, you know, or is he just going to stay here for a month or something, you know, and kind of just wait it out for training camp starts or what he may end up doing. So I don't envy that position that he's having to go through with that. But yeah, I mean, I personally don't think he's going to be out of shape per se. I think he's tried to do a good job of at least strength training and doing that portion of it. And Duvernay's always seemed to at least disciplined to me from his strength training. Like, I genuinely believe he's a disciplined guy when it comes to that. Now, for me, and people are aware, I don't, from an offensive line perspective, I always felt financially what Dorsey gave him was never what his actual value was. Now, don't get me wrong, he's an athletic guard. Guy is insanely athletic for his size and really talented at that. But in terms of technique and blocking and some of his weaknesses, they've always been there and they haven't really gone away. So it's never been like, man, if they don't have him, like, it's going to be a huge problem. It's just, you know, they're just losing some athletic ability when he's not on the field. But in terms of like pass protection and run blocking, that, I hate to say it, but you can put a lot of different people in that spot and there's not a drop off in that position. Even if people may not believe this, but even if he'd been there the whole year and played in the Super Bowl, I don't think there's that drop off that people assume there was by him not being there.
Yeah, I mean, no, the big issue in the Super Bowl was moving Rimmers from right tackle to left and then moving Wiley out to right tackle. So
and then my bigger thing that I want to point out is they still went out and got guards to potentially replace that position. They still went out and got Kyle Long. They still brought back Wiley. They still, you know, drafted Trey Smith. So, I mean, they're trying to replace that position, whether they want to admit it or not. That's their call. But they're trying to actively replace to improve upon what he brought to the table, even if he did come back.
Well, and to be clear, Kyle Long is expected to be available at some point during the season, depending on his recovery. But like you said, you've got LDT, you've got Andrew Wiley, you've got Trey Smith. You got one of those guys you got to think is going to be able to step up and perform. And,
right.
And depending on how you feel about Mike Rimmers at right tackle, that's a pretty good position if that's your weakest position on the offensive line. So
it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. But I just know I want to see a lot better offensive line play this year personally.
One thing you won't be seeing this year for the Chiefs is clutching and grabbing from Bashaud Breeland at the cornerback position. He apparently was the player to be named in the Mike Hughes trade and has signed with the Vikings. Hughes is an immensely talented guy who's had an injury history. If the Chiefs can get the best out of him, I think they win that trade, right? From a talent perspective, but I get that there's some nervousness because Breeland has been a steady performer and a reliable guy that you didn't have the injury issues with to put in there the last couple of years. He was a Super Bowl champion with the Chiefs. So how big a loss is Bashaud Breeland in your mind?
He was a physical corner. And I mean, they may miss some of that physicality and some of that tackling ability. But if they're able to get DeAndre Baker or Mike Hughes up to a certain point, it'll kind of be a wash if they're able to be healthy and be able to be on the field. Because, I mean, the problem that Breeland was starting to run into, and people, if you watch the tape each week, you notice it, but he was starting to slow down. Like, his athletic clip's getting ready to happen here. Like, it's going to happen the next 1 to 3 years, depending. And you're going to – it may be slow, you know, regression, or it may be, you know, or it may just be all at once at some point this season. Yeah. Like, it just falls off. But he was becoming more and more like Orlando Scandrick instead of less, you know, less in that territory. And that's part of the problem is athletically he wasn't able to hang on some of the routes anymore, and he just grabbed the receiver, and that's why he got 25 penalties called against him this year and led the team in penalties. And he had almost as many the year before. So that wasn't by accident. It's just, he's a physical guy, but on top of it, whenever the guys are getting to make some double moves or changes, he would immediately start grabbing cloth and try to be able to keep up with them and stay in their hip pocket. So whenever corners start doing that on a regular basis, when they used to not necessarily have that habit as much, that's when you know, like, they know too, that like things are starting to slow down from an athletic perspective. So to see the value I thought he was going to have on the market at about $7.5 million a year, for him to end up accepting a little bit over $2 million on a 1-year deal, that I think that's the bigger problem that he's got to kind of face, is that he's that long-term deal that he got, that multi-year deal that he got with the Panthers that got tossed out because of a failed physical. Like, that was his chance to make his money. Unfortunately, it's clearly not going to happen. He's just going to get routine 1-year deals from this point out playing in the league. So the fact that the Packers, the Chiefs, and the Vikings all gave him 1-year deals should kind of tell him where he's at this point in his career.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard for me to feel too bad though. Because I mean, I've never had the chance to turn down a 1-year, $2 million contract. and I don't think that I would, quite frankly. I mean,
not with that attitude, Todd.
I don't make nearly $2 million a year to do this podcast. Okay. I'll just put it that way.
I'm stunned to hear this development, Todd. So you're saying we need to band together like the cast of Friends, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. So at least get a, you know, a 5-piece nuggets from Wendy's out of the deal or something, man.
You had me at Wendy's.
All right. OTAs are over. You know, I mean, look, don't read too much into guys who missed a little bit of time, stuff like that. Andy was well aware of who wasn't going to be there. They weren't required. Everybody's expected to be there for mandatory mini camp. What's the value of mandatory mini camp? I mean, what, just let people know, like, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, what are the guys, and, you know, cause I'll probably let them all go Thursday. Right. But,
yeah.
This week, what is it that they need to accomplish? Is there anything that fans should be watching for, or should you just be happy to hear a few sound bites and then get ready for training camp if you're a Chiefs fan?
I think what they're going to be looking on the field is how they're going to test the guys who have been there. How quickly are some of the younger guys retaining some of the plays that they've been working on with? How well are they retaining the technique and some of the drills that they're doing? So it kind of gives them a nice little final gauge before training camp where some of those guys are at, and can give them feedback to those guys on what they need to work on in their free time in advance. But it kind of gives the veterans, it allows them to kind of, allows the coaching staff to kind of see the where the veterans are at from a conditioning perspective. Like if they're huffing and puffing after a couple plays, or are they able to make it through a significant amount of practice, and also kind of what's the temperature. Cause I still remember, I can bring this one up now, during mandatory minicamp with DeAnthony Thomas was out there in 2014, and it was a hot day out there. Like, I mean, it was hot, and Eric Bieniemy, man, he was being Eric Bieniemy, and he was pushing his running backs to the max. And Jamal Charles was just relentless running out there, and just did in such good conditioning. And I mean, I'm sweating out there, and I'm drinking water bottles left and right just to try to, and I'm just standing there, and those guys are out there performing at top end speed. And I remember how hot it was. And I know Therese and I were commenting how hot it was. And at one point, DeAnthony had a 80 yard run when he was testing out. I can't remember if it was on a jet sweep or if it was just a normal run. He had that 80 yard run, and I know Bieniemy was telling him to finish, and he got to the end of the end zone there, and like he was just gassed after that one run. And then he came walking back, and then they had the other running backs go through their reps, and then I could tell he's burnt out, and then they had him do another one, and then he got even more exhausted. And it, you know, and I knew then that he wasn't used to that heat here in Kansas City. So I mean, it gave them an answer with him, and I'm using that example because during his rookie year it gave them an example of where he was at from a conditioning perspective, and helped him understand that, hey, you may want to come back to Kansas City earlier, stay in Kansas City and kind of train in this heat so you can get used to it by the time training camp rolls around. So it was just little things like that you get to watch and pick up on. I know some of the media members, they'll see who's in what groupings and everything. And I know fans will look at Chiefs.com and try to see if they can see who's in the huddle at certain times with 15 in there, and, you know, engage some of that. So it, for me personally, being able to go out to all OTAs and minicamp whenever I did, I had a really good idea who was going to make the roster minus defensive line and defensive line and O-line. Like I already knew that one year, whenever it might have been that same year when Albert Wilson was on the squad and just tearing it up in OTAs, I knew he was going to make the team. And when Tyler Bray was unleashing that arm and there were certain routes he could throw that like they didn't have on the roster at quarterback spot with Chase and Alex, that I was like, yeah, he's going to make the team. Like, he's going to make the team just because that arm talent alone. So it's just, you know, there's those little nuances that you find out. But like I said, O-line and D-line, until the pads get on during training camp and preseason, those are kind of those always kind of become the unknowns per se. But like you have a good idea about corner, about every other skill position, and being a 7-on-7 concept, you have a really good idea by that point. But the one other thing I will say, you don't really get to find out if the tight ends can block until training camp. And then you also don't find out how running backs can do in pass protection until training camp, when they have some of the running back linebacker drills. So until those happen, like, you know, those are kind of the question marks that you have normally added in the training camp.
Yeah. That's why I really want to see Cornell Powell and you know, is he picking things up? Or, and Byron Pringle, you know, are they ready to are they guys that can contribute this year? Because wide receiver is a position where they need the help. Interested to see Nick Bolton and what his speed looks like against, you know, NFL guys. You know, I mean, does he look the part at middle linebacker? Does he look like he can cover? Same for Willie Gay. I mean, he's coming off the injury right before the Super Bowl and the surgery. You know, does that speed still look there? You know, is it apparent? You know, those are some of the guys that I think are worth keeping an eye on. Because like you said, Joshua Kando, guys like that, you know, Kando's a guy who's probably going to have to be productive if the Chiefs are going to get to where they ultimately want to be. He's a guy that's probably going to have to find a way into that rotation, but you're not going to get that answer with guys in the trenches. We're not going to find out whether Colin Saunders is ready to take a step up during mandatory minicamp.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you one bit, man.
All right, Nick, unless you got anything else, I think we're going to call this one.
Yeah, no, I think we can end the podcast for this week.
All right. I guess we can talk about all the developments at mandatory minicamp, which is to say not many. And then maybe look forward to an actual season, because, you know, we're getting close to July. We're getting close to training camp month.
Todd, don't wish the next month away, okay? Like, I mean, I want to enjoy this time right now.
All right. Well, you have fun. Crush all the, I need to clarify something. Is this a month where you eat a lot of Wendy's because you're sad that there is no football, or do you enjoy this month off?
No, I enjoy a break from it. July is always, what I will say for NFL teams, and I know for players and coaches that I've talked to over the years, July is a welcome time for veterans in both coaching and players, and they enjoy being able to get away for a little bit, for a month or so, and just kind of reset. But I know once it gets near that, after 4th of July and starts to get closer to July 27th range, I know there's some veterans that they're like, oh boy, here we start another year of it. So I know that they enjoy the time away. I know our dear friend Therese, that was kind of the one time a year that he got to try to take a break for a little bit.
Unless there was a GM change.
Yeah. Oh man, I remember how irritated he used to get whenever we'd talk about it, and how they had the Chiefs that year. They had the Macklin thing happen, and then Dorsey parted ways, and then Veach got announced as a GM. So poor Therese, who had planned all that vacation, ended up having to do multiple stories and never really got to have a true vacation that year. Yeah. I felt so bad for him. I was like, hey, you want to go to the movies, dude? We can go see a couple of movies. It'll be like a mini vacation for 90 minutes. And he's like, no, they'll probably break some more news again.
Yeah, I know he was, I know when the Dorsey firing happened, he was in San Diego. They parted ways, Todd. Yeah. He was in San Diego with some friends, and he was not too happy that he was having to deal with that. So
it was not an ideal summer for him.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, I think that's it for this podcast, and we'll be talking to you again soon. So until then, take care, kids.
How about those Chiefs?